As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. It's Wednesday, which means we'll be picking out some of the best work available on the Athletic right now and putting the author under the spotlight.
It's a clever free kick! And it's silence because Samuel Eto'o has given Cameroon the lead.
And I said, oh, there's a little tournament in January. And I didn't mean a little tournament. It just means like you say it when something, there's still a tournament. It's ironic.
Only half cleared away. It drops down to JJ Okocha, who scores what must be one of the best and most significant goals in a Nations Cup final. That is a thrilling goal by JJ Okocha.
Yes, this week we're going to highlight an article by the brilliant Carl Anker, simply entitled Why AFCON Matters. Because 2 long years after it was initially scheduled and disrupted, we're finally here. AFCON is back.
Yeah, really looking forward to that, Flo. And Jay Harris, reporter for The Athletic, has also been writing about Comoros, aka the Islands of the Moon, a tiny African nation which has written its own spectacular story by qualifying for AFCON for the first time in its history. He's joining us too. But let's say hello to Carl straight away because we want to ask him about Marcus Rashford. Carl, welcome. Been a while. I think it's been since the summer, actually. Pleasant memories of the Euros. Yeah.
It's a proper England pod reunion. Me, you, Dan. Yeah. It's just like old
lovely,
times.
Lovely stuff. But yeah, let's talk about Marcus Rashford before we get stuck into the podcast. Because Alan Shearer on the BBC said after the game that he's got a bit of a crisis of confidence, Carl. And I mean, it's been a difficult season for Manchester United in general, but in particular, it feels like Rashford's having a difficult time.
Yeah, it was a strange game against Aston Villa. You know, Ralf Rangnick moved to a sort of 4-2-3-1-ish. When Manchester United had the ball, we really saw Rashford back on the left-hand side. He was getting some chalk on his boots, getting wide. And, you know, first 20 minutes, Scott McTominay and whatnot kept trying to hit that switch to the left-hand side. Rashford was trying to get on the one-on-one. And he looked like he was cooking a little bit. You're like, oh, okay, this is more of the Rashford of old. And there are sort of two notable things about Rashford when you watch him play football a lot is, one, if he gets annoyed at a fullback getting touch tight in the first half, the next thing he'll do in the second half is he'll try and nutmeg them very early on. That's his, like, stop trying to tackle me. I'll nutmeg you now. And two, when he gets really frustrated and he's trying to take the game into an upper gear and like, right, you know, this isn't quite working for me. Let me try and score a goal. He will try and do a cut inside and shoot with a knuckleball. So these are two things that he tries quite often, but you don't really want to see him do it before the 50th minute. What was interesting against Villa was basically in the 35th minute, he sort of did one or two one-on-ones and then he went for the knuckleball. And you're going, are you doing this early because you're confident? Or are you doing this early because you're trying to prove that you're there? And then I think what became very evident throughout the game was he was snatching at opportunities. His decision-making wasn't great. We saw more of the problems that he had last season where he wasn't necessarily bending his runs to stay onside. I think Rashford's in a state right now where he is aware of the fact he hasn't necessarily played too much football because obviously he was... took 3 months out due to shoulder surgery. That's difficult hard to say really quickly.
It is hard to say, wow.
And I think he wants to put things right, and he wants to show everyone he's still Marcus Rashford. But I think he looks a bit leggy, and I think he was in one of those states where he possibly could have been taken out and substituted earlier, if not to it's just sort of like, you know, you're trying hard, but maybe it's not your day. But I'm sure he'll come good sooner rather than later, because he is still such a great talent.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit harsh singling him out if I look at Manchester United, because I don't think anyone's really doing themselves justice. I mean, Bruno Fernandes, off the top of my head, he looks a shadow of his former self, and he's not particularly been singled out. So yeah, I think it's a bit off to single Rashford out. But we don't want to talk about the game last night, because I'm still very, very upset with the VAR decision, which is very topical after the referee podcast we did last week.
If we get into that, Dan, we'll have to get the Athletic lawyers involved in this podcast. So we won't be touching that.
Absolutely fuming. So yeah, let's
just try a little pick and roll.
Let's move away from it, Carl, honestly. Remember, you can sign up for just £3.33 a month for 12 months to all the good written stuff. Just go to theathletic.com/footballpod and you'll enjoy unrivaled sports writing, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. And also, with the January transfer window open again, The Athletic are recording daily transfer shows, bringing you exclusive news and insight on all the big deals from the best newsroom in the industry. Unfortunately, you do have to hear my voice twice a week. The only place you can hear it is on The Athletic app, or by subscribing to The Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcast. You can also start a free trial of that today if you haven't already had a pop. With a heritage and spirit that never dies. Right, let's bring in Jay Harris as well, usually the Brentford reporter for The Athletic, but has been doing a little bit of moonlighting around the AFCON. Jay, you've been telling the fascinating story of the Comoros on the site this week, a story I personally wasn't aware of, and I'm sure there was probably a few others that weren't aware of it as well. Is this an example of what makes the African Cup of Nations so, so special?
110%. This is why I just love football in general. You know, these stories where an underdog comes up out of nowhere and punches well above their weight. For people that don't know, the Comoros is a collection of really, really small islands. It's near the east coast of Africa, the southeast coast of Africa, quite near Madagascar. And it's got a population of 815,000 people. They didn't win their first competitive international match, I think it's 2015, 2016. And nobody was expecting they'd get anywhere close. During the qualification process for it, they beat Togo 1-0 away from home. And that was like, oh my word, this is an incredible result. And then they follow that up in the next game and they draw 0-0 with Egypt. And Salah wasn't playing that game, but you know, you still had Trezeguet, Hegazi, who used to play for West Brom in the Premier League. And for the Comoros, that 0-0 draw with Egypt was sensational. This is like, oh my word, like, we don't care what happens after this. We've beaten Togo. We've got a draw with Egypt. We've made our country proud. And then they beat Kenya, and then they draw with Kenya, even though they had a man sent off. And then they draw again with Togo and they qualify for AFCON. And this is the first time they've been at AFCON, but it's also obviously the first time they've ever been at a major international tournament. So it's simply phenomenal. They didn't even join FIFA until 2005. So these are the stories I absolutely love. This is what gives me football joy. Just a country punching well above its weight. Unfortunately, they lost 1-0 in our opening game to Gabon last night. But I think the fact that they're even at this tournament is an achievement in and of itself.
They were great. They were great against Gabon. Like, they were all over them. So Gabon, Comoros, at Morocco, they're in the same group as Ghana. I'm of Ghanaian heritage. I was watching that game going, uh-oh, these lads can play. And, you know, it's the biggest AFCON so far, 24 teams, third place qualifiers and whatnot. So after Ghana lost to Morocco, I thought, you know, beat Comoros, get a draw, maybe you can sneak in fourth place. But I watched that Gabon game going, oh, am I secretly in a group of death here?
I always thought that group was a group of death, Carl. I had group of death written all over it. Like, I think Ghana are going to struggle. But what I think is really nice, Jay, about what you brought forward in this piece and some of the quotes as well from the players is I think it links really nicely to what Carl wrote about in his Why AFCON Matters piece, especially because there's a quote in your piece, Jay, about Rafadini Abdullah, who talks about he didn't even know that Comoros had a national team. And I think what makes AFCON really special for me anyway, and in Carl's piece, he has a quote from Salim Masood Said, who talks about the educational aspect of AFCON is like learning about football, even learning about countries. For me, it was learning about flags. So much of that comes from watching football. Like, you become really good at flag rounds or pub quizzes when you watch a lot of football because you know all of them. I'd never seen the Comoros flag until yesterday. Saturday. Until watching that game on Monday, I'd never seen that flag. And I think it's amazing to kind of just hear about all these stories for the first time. And even the players that playing in the team are, you know, like Carl said, a lot of diaspora who are going back to their, you know, nations where their family have heritage, but they may never have been before, and now learning about their own culture through football, which is why I think AFCON is especially so unique, because of the diaspora and how vast it is.
But that's the power of international football, right? It just brings cultures from all across the world all together. Like, I can remember the first international tournament that I watched when I was younger was the 2002 World Cup in South Korea and Japan. And you start following all these teams that you've never heard of before. I think that's the year Senegal knock out France. And you think, oh my God, Senegal, where's this? What's this country? And then I think, you know, all these players, Elhadj Diouf, they get their big moves to Premier League clubs off the back of that. But I'm sure Carl can speak more eloquently on what you touched on there. But yeah, one of the most probably poetic and beautiful things about AFCON is, like you said, all these players who, for the Comoros, the vast majority of them have been born in France, have kind of over time wanted to get back in touch with their ancestral heritage. Like you said, Rafaleen Abdallah, it might have been one of the other players, it escapes me, but basically said, I've never been to the Comoros before, wasn't interested. I grew up in France. That was the dream. That didn't work out. So in the beginning, wasn't really that fussed about playing for the Comoros. There was a lot of hesitation. And then he said the second he went over to the island, I think the exact quote was, all my fears disappeared. Through the power of football, he's just reconnected with his ancestry and heritage. And I think that's beautiful. And that's what these tournaments are all about. I've got friends who are from Cameroon, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and they're going to be so vocal about this tournament. And they're so proud that it's going to be on Sky Sports. And that's what the power of international football is all about, bringing all these different cultures together. And it's just a celebration. That's what these tournaments are supposed to be.
Yeah, Carl, your piece, that for people who haven't read it, starts with a simple statement. It says, Africa is huge. Got to hold my hands up here, and I think I'm quite guilty of this. I haven't disrespected AFCON because I haven't said anything bad about it. But I don't think I've ever paid loads of attention to it in my life, which I'm a little bit ashamed of. But can you just tell us why it does matter? I know Jay's just touched on some of the reasons, but to you, can you just tell us why AFCON matters and detail a few bits that are in your piece?
There's a quote that says, man is a lot more interested in the interest than their rights. And something that has always fascinated me and I found a bit curious and a bit strange is how names, immigrant names. So if you come to the United Kingdom and you have a name that is very much not of English, French or you know, quote unquote, accepted pronunciation, it will take you a while at school, right? So it'll take you a while for your school teacher to understand how to say your name properly. And there's always that thing when you're in the school register and you've got that long name. It's like, oh, yes. And I'm talking to you right now. And I'm Carl Anker, partly because my parents were very much, let's give him a slightly easier name for the area he was growing up in. Right. And I always find it interesting how at the start of every single international tournament we have, right, Euros, AFCON, Copa America, there's always one player name that's hard to say. But if that football player has a really good tournament, by the quarterfinals, by the semifinals, we always get it. And the one I always think about was Michy Batshuayi. You know, Euro 2016, UEFA did this thing about how to pronounce player names, and it was Batshuayi, and I went, okay, this is a good football player for Marseille. I don't know how to say that name. But I knew, end of the group stages, if this kid plays a lot for Belgium, we'd all figure it out. Comes to England, starts playing for Chelsea, everyone now knows how to say Michy Batshuayi. And in that way of AFCON is knowledge. AFCON is knowledge not only for Western viewers, but it's also knowledge for the first generation, the second generation, the third generation, the diaspora kid, right? I can remember I'm of the age where no one really knew where Ghana was, right? You know, my parents come to England in the 80s, around the 90s, and knowledge of West Africa was very much Nigeria or bust. And then Tony Yeboah scores that goal for Leeds.
Yeboah.
And my dad always remembers how people immediately began to understand what Ghana was and where it was. And Ghana was this country close to Nigeria because there was this football player who played for Leeds and he scored a great goal. I have a friend, she is called Kelechi, and she told me that one day she was at her job and people always had problems saying her name. And then all of a sudden, like, the security guard finally understood how to say Kelechi. And she went, what's going on? Iheanacho started scoring goals. for Man City, right? Like, this is the power of football. This is the, it teaches you stuff even if you don't know you're learning stuff. And I think AFCON has always been really important for me because it's every 2 years, there's just a very good way for me to go, hello, everyone. This is what Ghana is. Hello, everyone. This is my people. This is what my flag looks like. This is what our national anthem is about. Our national anthem has these lyrics. My country is less than 65 years of age. We were the first ever sub-Sahara country to declare independence. We declared independence from the British. We're going to play against this country. When we play against Nigeria, that's the biggest grudge match ever. Here's a story about when my dad found out Ghana was going to play Nigeria in the knockouts of AFCON and basically took the next day off work, flew back to Ghana so he could watch it, right? We always talk about World Cup stories and Euro stories. And you know, we've just did the England show last year, and we always talk about it's coming home, about football coming home. Whereas I think AFCON is very much, it's a celebration. It's really important to me because it's so many people going, this is what my home looks like. It is wholly unique. It is not what Western Europe thinks of as home, right? I think if you ever are confused as to why AFCON matters, try and find, you know, try and get a feed where that is showing an AFCON game before kickoff and just listen to the national anthems, because so many of these national anthems talk about freedom, talk about blood, tragedy, and pride, and essentially kicking out some form of colonial power, right? Go talk to an Algerian football fan about their football team and how happy they are and how proud they are of their national team and what they've done in the last 5 or 6 years to basically make it easier for first generation, second generation Algerians to play for the national team rather than declare for France. They will have very, very serious things to say about Zinedine Zidane, you know? You talk to a Ghanaian football fan of a certain age about the Ayew brothers, and I go, yeah, look, they're really frustrating, but their dad is Abedi Pele, and they'll tell you this beautiful story about Abedi Pele. You talk to Zambian football fans, and they'll tell you this amazing story about their triumph in 2013. You talk to Ivory Coast football fans, and they'll tell you about how it's really strange that they had this amazing golden generation led by Didier Drogba, but didn't win AFCON because AFCON is mad. Like, golden generations mean absolutely nothing in AFCON. But when you get a golden generation, you know you need to pay special attention because it's not like in England, it's not like in Portugal, it's not like in France, where golden generation comes every 20 years. You get a golden generation of African football players, like that's it. Like, I don't know when these boys are coming back. So I really hope we can win it in their window. Footballing stories at AFCON are different from footballing stories in a Euros or necessarily in a World Cup if you have it with a Eurocentric or South American perspective. I know Jack Lann often covers South American football, and he often talks about Copa Americas, and he described the Copa America once as having its own unique time signature. So if you like listening to music, you know, on a 4/4 beat, and you listen to something of a Copa America, Copa Libertadores, it's like on a 3/4 beat. You're going, hang on, wait, this sounds odd. But then you sort of retune your ears. I think AFCON's the same. It's got its own different time signatures. It's got its own unique languages and verbs and terms. You know, the very first game of AFCON, 40 seconds in, just a horrendous yellow card. That should never have been a yellow card. I remember when AFCON in 2019 had VAR, and all of my friends, you know, first generation diasporic is going to VAR AFCON is going to be absolutely hilarious, and it was, because it was chaos. Like, you just seeing grown men argue with a computer saying I wasn't offside. Well, here's a screenshot going I'm not. Just the fact that Senegal won in the 97th minute with a penalty in this year's AFCON as well. Like, there is so much chaos and lack of a better term, vibes to an AFCON. And I'm speaking to you as a person very much who likes the stats, who likes tactics, who likes talking about XG. And I remember Jonathan Wilson has covered about 8 AFCONs, and he wrote Inverting the Pyramid, and he's written many a dispatch from AFCON going, look, all my tactical information, all the stuff I've written in these books doesn't really matter, because at AFCON, tactics are just, playing a 4-4-2, and when it gets busy, lump it to the big man. And that's how a golden generation gets knocked out, right? You'll be watching AFCON thinking that your golden generation is going to play really well, and then all of a sudden this weird jobbing centre forward that's been all over South Asia and parts of Germany just absolutely destroys your team, and you're going, who, why has this happened? I still get shivers whenever someone mentions Aristide Banse from Burkina Faso, because he shouldn't have beaten Ghana in 2013, but he destroyed us.
Case in point as well, Aaron Bupenza, who scored for Gabon yesterday, 25 years old, plays in Qatar, never heard of him. Unbelievable player. I'm now convinced that QPR should sign him. He scored such a good goal and he was just honestly so good yesterday. His movement was exceptional. He stayed onside most of the game. He was timing his runs to perfection. He was so quick. Even when the centre-half had about 10 yards on him, when he had a handicap, he would just beat them to the ball. And now I'm going to be following his career with every inch of my life. I'm going to be watching him step by step and waiting for him to come over and play in the Championship. I think that is what, like you said, Carl, that makes it so special. But something you also mentioned, the piece, is Sebastian Heller, who plays for Ivory Coast, and Trusi Kong, who plays for Nigeria, talking about the disrespect that the tournament's had. Do you think that's shifting a little bit with this addition, with an expanded competition? So we've got obviously more players playing who play in Europe, also sort of reconnecting. Or do you think there is still a massive lack of respect for this?
I think there's a greater understanding of how important AFCON is. And I think there's a greater pride in the Africa diaspora, right? I mean, from a personal perspective, there was times going to school where I didn't really show off my Ghanaian heritage, right? I wasn't, certain school kids were bringing in certain things for lunch and I wasn't bringing in my jollof rice, so to speak. Whereas now I'm a lot more, I'm a bit older, I'm a lot more comfortable in my own skin. I think I'm a lot more proud of where I come from. I want to reconnect with my roots now. I want to learn my mother tongue that I didn't learn as a child. And I think you're seeing that more in this generation of football players and this generation of people especially, right? I think thanks to the work of the Algerian FA and the Moroccan FA as well, you're seeing changes to FIFA ruling. So now first generation, second generation diaspora kids who may have got a cap for England or France or Portugal's under 21 team, and then being sort of locked into those national teams, are now able to change their allegiances and swap back. I think, you know, Wilfried Zaha thinking, I'm not really going to play for England, let me actually reconnect with my roots and play for Ivory Coast, was interesting. You know, he didn't make the squad, but you're seeing more of that now. You're seeing more prominent players who might have 20, 30 years ago played for France or played for England or played for the Netherlands, play for their mother nations. And I think that's really cool, right? And again, I highly recommend if you ever meet an Algerian football fan, go, what do you think of Zinedine Zidane? Because they'll say, well, he's ours. He's ours. He would have played for us if the Algerian FA had sorted their XYZ. Ask them what they think of Karim Benzema as well. Like, that's one of the really cool things about AFCON, is because you do have that, you know, 2 or 3 weeks where you can just talk so freely about your country's history, its languages, its conflicts, it, what, you know, its favorite sons and daughters, what you think of certain politicians. It's one of the strange times where, and you know, Africa's history is so, there is so much tragedy in so many African nations, and if you are of a certain age, you have African heritage, you probably have a family member that doesn't really want to talk about it too much, right? We'll probably talk about politics and probably talk about life back home, not in English, or talk about it, you know, behind closed doors. But you sit down next to your certain uncle, your certain aunt, or your certain granddad in front of AFCON when their national team is playing, and that's the great time. That's when you learn about what life was back home. That's when I learned from my Uncle Alex sort of what he was getting up to by the Volta River in the 80s. I was like, what? It's just such an enlightening and enlivening experience. And I think we're getting to this point now where we want to tell these stories. We're getting to a point where it doesn't have to be Eurocentric in everything. And I really enjoyed Haller's question. Like, why would you ask me, would I rather stay at Ajax or go play for Ivory Coast? Of course I'm going to play. Like, it's just such a non-question. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, maybe he probably would have not wanted to leave him for an AFCON. Maybe 20 years ago, maybe a football club the size of Ajax would have said, actually, let's not sign this football player because he's going to be away every 2 or 3 years. But I think now there's such a slowly growing acceptance that, no, here I am as a football player. You take everything, parts of my identity. And I think that's great.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast, and we'll talk about Ian Wright, why AFCON is supposed to be different, and also bring you a statement from Sky in response to questions we asked about their AFCON coverage so far. Stay with us.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Send into outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send in.
Is there ever a tournament more disrespected? More disrespected than the African Cup of Nations? There's no greater honor, none, as a sports person, than representing your country. The coverage is completely tinged with racism. Completely tinged.
Yeah, we've got some common misconceptions about AFCON that we're in Carl's piece here. So AFCON is too disruptive to the European football calendar. Second one is it should move to a June-July cycle. AFCON should happen every 4 years instead of two. The quality of pitches used in the competition is bad, as are the goalkeepers. I know Flo will definitely disagree with that. And then the last one, which, you know, you could say about any football, is African football is corrupt and the money often goes missing. You know, there's some big, big statements there that are a lot of them very, very untrue. What I was thinking by reading that and looking at Carl's piece and just our discussion so far is it is a shame, actually, that it does happen mid-season and that it happens in the... I know there's reasons for it, but it happens whilst the Premier League and the FA Cup are going on, because it does end up getting a little bit lost in there. It'd be great if it was separate and the only football on at that time, so people could just focus fully on that and tune in. I think there's a danger it gets lost a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And if I could just go back to something Carl said a minute ago that really struck a chord with me, when Carl was talking about how when AFCON's on, you know, it really helps him to kind of reconnect with his roots back in Ghana. My family are from Barbados originally, so I've been going to Notting Hill Carnival literally since I was about 2-3 years old. And I'm 26 now. And I really remember when I was going to primary school and I was going to Notting Hill Carnival, all the other kids in my school were like, what on earth are you going to that for? You know, it's really dangerous. It's really violent. There was just this really common misperception about it. And it used to really upset me. And then obviously, as I've grown older and I've, you know, transitioned into becoming a teenager, people are like, oh, I've heard Notting Hill Carnival's quite a good knees up. Do you know what I mean? I might come along and stuff like that. And that really frustrates me. And obviously, part of me is really glad that perception about Notting Hill Carnival's changed. But for me, it was always about, right, I can go down to Notting Hill Carnival with my dad. I can see people that look like me, people that talk like me, people that listen to not just Bob Marley, but old school reggae roots like Max Romeo, Gregory Isaacs, all those kind of things. I think what Carl's saying about AFCON, if I can apply the Notting Hill Carnival logic to that, is that slowly over time, people are finally catching up and realizing that it's a celebration of culture and that's something that should be respected. And going to what you're saying about some of the comments that have been put to AFCON over the years, it's always felt like it's been belittled. I can constantly remember whenever an African player gets linked with a Premier League club, someone's always going to throw in a comment, yeah, but you're going to lose them every couple of years to AFCON. So, you know, whack 10 million off the price at least or something like that. And it's just disrespectful. You know, I think we also need to look at the fact that this tournament was actually going to be held in the summer. But obviously COVID played a factor. I think Cameroon has like quite a heavy monsoon season and that was another factor in changing it. So they've looked at these things, but that's how they've been doing it for years. And who are we to kind of come along and say, completely rip up how you've been doing things so you can fit in with how European football works? Because
I mean,
that's
one thing I think about a lot is if you are a European federation, if you run a European league and you're aware that AFCON happens every single 2 years, to your winter break. You have a winter break, right? France has a winter break. Germany has a winter break. Spain has a winter break. Just go, right, you know, you talk to CAF when you know when you're playing AFCON these 2 weeks. Cheers, cool. We'll just move.
Send an email.
Quick
just
email.
Pop off a
just queue
email.
This up.
That's all you
great,
need to be
done. Fine. No one misses a player during the winter break. They all go off to their tournament and they come back. Like that. That's a really easy way. No one misses a game of football that just requires just a little bit of. And it's not even necessarily compromise. Just communication. But I think there's been a constant conversation, has been a constant sort of tongue wagging and finger shaking at AFCON and African football without ever properly considering what's gone into African football, right? We've talked about, you know, there's been massive discussion about the COVID risk of Cameroon right now. And you're going, well, should we not give them more vaccines? You know, should we not have a serious conversation about the two-tier system involving COVID vaccines right now, where if you're a football player from African nation currently based in the United Kingdom, you have a lot more access to COVID vaccines, a lot more access to COVID testing than, say, their uncle who's back home. Is there something that can be done to alleviate that sort of risk, right? Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation about the tense political situation in Cameroon right now, but I'm not really seeing much in discussed by football. What is that conflict? How has that conflict come about? If you speak to someone from Cameroon about that, say, well, yeah, it's a long-running sort of rumbling issue that very much is fraught along language lines and sometimes religious lines. And yes, they understand it's not safe for everyone. And depending on you know, who you are, what the accent you use, certain areas of Cameroon are dangerous. However, we hold football tournaments in loads of strange places all the time. Where was the last World Cup? Where was the next World Cup? Yeah, where did we hold some games of the Euros? Football is not safe for everyone, right? There is two or three footballing tournaments in the last 5 or 10 years that I just can't go to, right? There are certain Champions League fixtures or Europa League fixtures that are a little bit spicier for me to attend than say, Flo to attend. But that is a different sort of spice than, say, if Dan were to attend as well, shall we say. So it's that very strange thing where when an AFCON comes along, everyone's very alarmed and very concerned about the safety of football and where money goes missing in football and the quality of football pitches and the quality of goalkeeping. But when it happens in a footballing sphere that everyone's used to, no one tends to bat an eye, which I find really interesting. Everyone's fine when it comes to spending 20, 30 million on their fifth choice centre back. But when it comes to spending 20, 30 million on the star player from an AFCON, it's like, oh no, you can't be doing that. Why not?
I'm just thinking about how stupid it is, you know, that, you know, people kicking off about AFCON and when it is. They're having a World Cup at Christmas next year. And then, like, in Qatar?
Well, precisely.
You can't have it both ways. It doesn't make any sense.
I think a prime example of the sort of opinion shifting is the fact that for this AFCON, it's now moved to people saying, oh, well, Salah's only missing games against Palace and Brentford, I think it is. You know, it's not that bad. Carl, you mentioned in the piece as well quotes from Ian Wright, who's always just always on the money on these sorts of things and talking about the disrespect for the tournament and how some of it's tinged with racism. I mean, the something that's got a lot of people talking on Twitter is the broadcast coverage. And we've got a statement from Sky in response to that. Because I think all of us have been a little bit disappointed with the way that... I think there was general excitement around the fact that Sky got the rights because... In previous editions of AFCON, it's been really hard to find. It's been like sometimes a bit on ITV, sometimes a bit on Eurosport. Then BBC have got some games and you're like, right, well, where do I go just to watch some matches? But I think there was general excitement when Sky Sports got the rights to this and people were really looking forward to watching the tournament and having sort of a bit more of a central base for it. I know BBC also showing some games. But so far, the coverage has been pretty minimal. It's sort of just in and out of matches, single commentary, no build up, no analysis. You know, it's very sort of world feed basic vibes. And yeah, I think all of us have been a little bit disappointed because we were expecting a little bit more. And I think that kind of screams of the disrespect that both Ian Wright and, you know, yourself and lots of other people and lots of us think that AFCON is getting. We do have a response from Sky on that. They've said, the African Cup of Nations is an excellent tournament, and by acquiring this right, we are offering our customers the opportunity to watch an additional 52 live matches. We put our trust in the world feed, but are looking for ways to improve the coverage of the competition. We will be introducing our own commentary teams in the coming days, and we're working through ways to further improve the production of the games as the tournament progresses. So it does seem like for the knockout stages, we'll get a little bit more of a Sky product rather than just taking the world feed from, you know, that's provided to them.
It feels like a missed opportunity. I mean,
yeah.
If you think about how many diaspora creatives are in London alone, how many people working in the football industry how many Nigerian freelancers, how many Ghanaian freelancers, how many Senegalese freelancers that are in London, how many people in, you know, from with Algerian heritage could very eloquently speak about the Algerian national football team that could very easily come in for a quick zoom and go, right, here's our national team, here's the history of it, here's our greatest ever player, here's what you think about Zidane and Benzema, and here we go to the game. Just that sort of stuff. I think it cost a few thousand to do a little bit of pre and post-match coverage at the moment, at a time where, you know, you do have these great stories of the group stages. I'm not sure if Jay's new favourite team are going to make it to the knockouts, but it would be a real shame if...
When they beat Ghana, they will. But to me, Carl, what it screams of is what the WSL had on the FA player. Mm. But to put that in perspective, that's a domestic women's football competition involving 12 teams. It's not a major international football tournament. So the two things are very different products. Now the WSL has better coverage and it still has games on a single camera feed with one commentator and no replays. But it's a domestic women's football competition. It's not a major international event. And those are the differences. Is a major international event needs to be treated as such. And I think... I agree with you. I think it is a massive missed opportunity, and it will be interesting to see how the tournament does progress and what the coverage looks like, because all eyes are on them now. Mm. And people are interested. People are like, especially on my Twitter feed, like, I've never seen so many people talking about AFCON. So people are chomping at the bit to watch football content and to also find out more about these players, find out more about these countries and their cultures. And we're just getting the bare basics.
Yeah. Like, you want to maintain that interest, and to do that, you've got to do pre-match, you've got to do post-match, yeah. you've got to have a colour commentator to give you a little bit more information.
Also, if there's VAR chaos, we want to know what the managers and players think about the VAR chaos. We want to know what Dan Bardell, aka VAR, you know, the gaffer, thinks about it. We need to know these things. We can't.
I was going to say,
you know,
as well, Jai, it's a chance to unearth some new pundits. As well, get some different voices in. It's a massive opportunity. In fact, it being on Sky and it having that, so many people, so many eyes on it, there would really be a chance to unearth some new pundits as well.
110%. I think, obviously, I used to work for Sky, so I have an appreciation that because they got the broadcast rights quite late, that there's going to be some difficulty involved in how quickly they can kind of ramp up their operations. But it also means, I also know, it's very easy to just hire a studio out in their building and get a couple of people alongside. And like you said, and like Carla said, there are so many people that would be willingly put their hands up for that opportunity. And I think what Carl was talking about, it being a missed opportunity, is bang on the money. Because when I saw Sky Sports got the rights, I thought, this is going to be a generational tournament. This is going to be that tournament that's a marking point where people look back and say, do you know what, the 2021-22 AFCON, that was the tournament that kind of really catapulted it into the limelight. That was the turning point. And then opening game and you've got absolutely nothing. Even last night, I completely forgot that there was no post-match, right? So, you know, Comoros have lost. So, you know, I was leaning back on my sofa. I was waiting. I was thinking, right, come on. I want to hear what's happened. You know, I want them to break down what defender's mistake it was for the goal. Or maybe it was Lupenza's brilliant run. And then it just rolled over into something random. I don't know if it was wrestling or something like that. And so hang on a second.
The thing that gets me is they don't have halftime coverage.
Mm. They just
show the highlights. They show the highlights of the first half.
It's very confusing.
There's always that half second I have where I'm going, oh, second half already? Yeah. Hang on. it's the first half. But things will get... I'm really interested to see what the BBC do with their coverage. So they've got Egypt versus Nigeria on Tuesday night. And I would hope that there's enough African players in the Premier League that they'll give us a little bit, at least talk about Mohamed Salah a little bit before we kick on. I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, the fact that, this really hurts me to say as a Ghanaian person, how Nigeria have got the makings of a golden generation. That'd be cool to share with the rest of the footballing world.
I sit here as a hypocrite because, you know, I've not watched any of it. I've not really been engaged with it at all. But even just by doing this podcast, I'm thinking, I'm gonna watch them. I want to watch Comoros. Just from talking to Jack, I want to watch Comoros now. So they've definitely got one extra viewer coming in the next few days because I'm going to definitely be tuning in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And it will be interesting. I think all eyes, like you said, Carl, will be on the BBC now to see what they do with it. But it's been brilliant chatting to you guys about the tournament. If anyone hasn't watched yet, make sure you do. Sky and BBC, like we said, are doing coverage. And there's just loads on The Athletic at the moment. There's loads all over Twitter as well. And, you know, you're bound to the team you support, you're bound to have a player playing in AFCON right now because it's an expanded tournament, 24 teams, so many countries represented. So I'm sure you can find a reason that you want to connect and just learn more about the magical world of football. So, Carl, Jay, thank you so much for joining us. It's been brilliant to chat with you.
It's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure.
Up the Comoros.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Still time to talk about some of the other great writing that's up on the site right now. Flo, what have you been enjoying?
Well, we touched on the FA Cup in the pod, and
we didn't.
We did. You talked about
we
you
didn't.
Talked about the magic of the cup.
No, there's no magic left for me. It's all gone.
Well, the so-called magic. Anyway, Michael Cox has done a brilliant piece saying don't be surprised by the brilliance of the FA Cup, and I think it's an important one because there is just this like weird narrative that the FA Cup is boring or lost its magic, whatever, and it's now become a bit of a cliche and actually a joke. And you know, I don't think we should be surprised at how good the third round was and how good the competition will probably be throughout the next couple of weeks and months. So, yeah, nice piece where Michael Cox has kind of highlighted how good the FA Cup is and why, you know, it should never die because it's a brilliant competition.
And away from the poison of the FA Cup, I'm going to shout out my Aston Villa cohort, Greg Evans. He's done some great stuff around Coutinho moving to Villa that I've enjoyed reading about how that's worked behind the scenes, how Villa have managed to get that over the line. So yeah, if you're interested in the third most expensive player in the world going to play for Aston Villa, then you can read Greg's piece up on the website right now.
And a final reminder from me that you can read every article we've mentioned and so much more by signing up to The Athletic. Save 33% on a full subscription today by visiting theathletic.com/footballpod.
Yep, thanks ever so much, Flo, and our thanks go to both Carl Anker and Jay Harris as well. And of course, thank you to all of you for listening as well. Please get involved in the comments section. We would love to hear your thoughts. And wherever you do get your podcasts, if you're enjoying the show, then please leave us a nice review too. This was the Athletic Football Podcast. Mark Chapman and Matt Slater reconvene to discuss the business of sport tomorrow, and we hope you will join us again.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.